Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers. For a rich, delicious experience, whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest, just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight and won't steer you wrong,
Johnny Appleseed himself,
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Hey, we're back into the daily grind after a holiday weekend. Welcome back to the show, guys. I'm glad to have you here. Man, I feel like a lot has happened in the last week, and I don't need to bore you with my complete daily life, but I had a couple things happen that I would like to share with you. And the first one, I had one of the scariest things ever happened to me in my life. So I was it was one night after work. My wife was at hockey and I was working in the garage, and you know, my boys are finally getting to that age where I feel like it can give them just a little bit of freedom to try to, you know, be boys, do their thing, but, you know, be close by in supervision. And they came down, they're like, "Dad, we want to play outside." I'm like, "Absolutely, go out, you know, play outside, boys, you know, be kids." And they started wandering. Of course, you know, I got distracted in the garage, and they just went for a walk in the yard, and they ended up going into some bushes on my at my house, some arborvitas. And I felt so bad. They found a nest of yellow jackets. It was a huge nest that was underground, and the poor guys stepped on them, and I heard the most horrific screams. And man, I want to tell you, the sight that I have in my mind of what I saw when they came down towards the house, and it was just, it's still etched in my mind. It creeps me out. But each boy got stung about 12 to 15 times. They had bees all over them. I ended up picking both kids up and running away from the nest, and then I ended up jumping in the pool with them to try to get the bees off, and it works to some degree, but I had to strip them down, and man, it was just scary. Unfortunately, we had no reactions. That was the first time I believe any of them were ever stung, so I had no idea what to expect, and they got stung literally a dozen times or more. So called the doctor, said Benadryl and monitor, and that's what we did. And it was a painful night, even into to sleeping hours. We didn't, mom and dad didn't get a lot of sleep just because kids were uncomfortable. By morning time, they were back to normal, and it was a praise God moment of how much worse it could have been than what it actually was. But you want to talk about scary? Sheesh. What else do we got going on here? I went and got a little bit of scouting in New Jersey. I just checked out a brand new area. I reminded myself why off-season scouting is so important, basically in the wintertime, just because you can navigate woods and see the woods so much better, and you can also get rid of some of the viney, thorny, invasive vegetation. You can navigate it a little bit easier than it is when it's during the active growing season. One of the reasons I choose to scout bear this time of year is more recent sign. You know, the more recent it is, I feel like the more relevant it is for the upcoming season. But what is nice is when you can walk around and learn a property. I went to a brand new property. I checked it out in passing last year, but it was there was some beans surrounding it. There wasn't any corn, and it really didn't entice me to check out for bear. But this year, there's corn, and it, of course, you know, flipped the excitement level over to pretty high. So checked it out, and it, hey, sure enough, there is a lot of bear sign. There's deer sign. It's an overwhelming piece to hunt, and I got to be little open and vulnerable. I'm not sure how to hunt some of it. The access is simple in the beginning, but depending on where you would like to make your position, I have no idea how to access some of it without taking a clippers, a saw, a machete, or crawling, or doing something. I mean, there's some nasty, nasty vegetation to get back to some of the places I'd like to go. And if I hunt towards the fields, you know, a lot of the fields are different than back here at home. You know, the weeds are just insane. I mean, the farmer that farms it does a very nice job in field. I mean, I'm looking at his crops, and I can tell he does a good job managing his crops. But the field perimeters, like a lot of that extra maintenance that you'll see on some state land in Pennsylvania, where you're mowing field edges, spraying field edges, maintaining some of the stuff, and that's non-existent down here. So there's places where there's weeds 5, 6, 7 feet tall, thick as the hair on a dog, and like you just can't walk through it with sense. And you know, tree lines, a lot of time you think you can sneak in and get in a tree line for a tree stand or something like that. Man, I don't know if I can do it on some of these tree lines. So it's a challenging place. I'm thinking I might have to get outside my comfort zone a little bit in how I access and possibly doing some ground hunting if I hunt this place. Got a couple more places to check out here as we get closer towards season. But, I mean, I look at the calendar if I wanted to do some deer hunting in some of those places, I'm talking next week, September 13th. I can't believe it's here. I'm not even close to ready. I got to get through my stuff. I got to shoot some broadheads a little bit more. I can't believe it's here. It always does this. It sneaks up quicker than I'm ready for it. But I'm sure a lot of you guys feel that way. And you got to be feeling excited with the weather we have, right? It's been cool. It's been feeling like archery season. I've been seeing deer changing their coats. I've been getting some hard antlered deer on camera. I've seen a few, whether it was pictures sent to me or just driving around and stuff. It's here, guys. It is flat out here. And I am excited. And I'm looking forward to doing a lot more fall hunting talk. And I think this episode is going to be a pretty good way to kick the season off in some senses. This week I'm talking with Devon Zimmerman and Terry Berge. And for those of you who aren't familiar with those guys, they are the owner-operator of Little Mountain Outfitters. Now, so any of you who've listened to the show for a long time, you know that Devon is actually the person who started this podcast with me. And I kind of took it over after a few months. We made some transitions, but you know, I'm still very good friends with Devon. And have him on, and then Terry, who works in the shop, have him on for the first time. And this is going to be a conversation of shop life. We're going to talk a little bit about how their hunting has changed over the years. You know, both of these guys are extremely passionate about archery and deer hunting. But guess what? They both have families. They both have responsibilities. And it's not all, everything that glitters is not gold. Let's just say that in some senses. So they still have a lot to balance in their personal lives in order to hunt. And they talk about that. And it's a pretty realistic conversation that I think a lot of us can relate to. We talk about how their hunting has changed, the goals they set, the objectives they have. We talk about shop life itself, setting bows up. We talk about gear that they've tinkered with and experienced over the years and their personal opinions on some things. It's a really good episode for gear prep, as well as just being relatable to two guys that work their tails off all week long and try their best to help you guys as a consumer. So we're going to dive into this episode with Devon and Terry from Little Mountain Outfitters. Right before a quick hand, we're going to have a commercial break here. And the first guys I want to talk to you about is Radix Hunting. So one of the things you'll notice, and I'm blessed to have a couple of partners on the show. They support us, and we support them. And the first thing is, they're all small businesses. And everybody's definition of what a small business is might be a little bit different, right? But these are all, in my opinion, blue-collar people that are building a business up and building it around them, and they're doing it in the hunting industry. And I personally have a soft spot for anybody who's doing what they can, working their tail off in this space full-time. First of all, these guys have great quality products. I've said this time and time again, Radix Hunting has the best blinds I've ever used. They've got the best cameras I've ever used from the sense of cell cameras, the M-Core cell cameras. I can't say enough positive things about. And they've got other hunting gear that fits you as a consumer based on price point. Check out Radix Hunting. Huntworth, same line of quality coming here. I've been using the Disruption camo pattern now for the past 2-3 seasons. It's the digital camo pattern. I love it. From shopping with the heat boost set side of things, whether it's the Saskatoon layers, which is the heavyweight season, or if I'm going lightweight season in archery and I'm wearing Durham pants and a Sheldon hoodie. This is clothing that it's the best hunting clothing that I've ever used. Check it out at huntworthgear.com. And then lastly is today's guest, Little Mountain Outfitters. Little Mountain Outfitters, they're located in Richland, Pennsylvania, and I had the opportunity to sit down with them in the shop to record this episode. You know, I'm fortunate enough that I live pretty close distance, but you can support a small archery company like Little Mountain Outfitters by going to littlemountainoutfitters.com, and all the things we talk about on today's show, you're going to be able to have access to on their website at littlemountainoutfitters.com. And if you use the code WOODSMAN10 at checkout, you will save 10% off of your purchase. And that not only supports Little Mountain Outfitters in their purchase, you also support this show. When you use that code, you know, it's helping me out. I'm affiliated with them. And if that's something that you'd like to support, is the Pennsylvania Woodsman Show, I would love it if you go shopping there. In fact, when you do that on all these companies, it's all relative to the Woodsman Show and keep this show going. And I appreciate your support, and so do these partners. Let's dive into this episode with Devon and Terry. Attention archers, would you like to be part of the world's oldest gathering of bow hunters? Then mark your calendars for the annual Pennsylvania Bow Hunters Festival. This annual three-day event is held at the Sullivan County Fairgrounds in Forksville, Pennsylvania, which has been going on since 1957. It's a family-friendly event allowing participants to engage in 10 different archery shooting areas, including 3D, moving small game targets, a timed clay pigeon shoot, a steel boar, and the renowned Forksville running deer target. There's also a ton of food, fellowship, and entertainment to be made. The 2025 festival is scheduled for September 19th to the 21st, with daily hours running 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. This event is organized by a nonprofit committee, and all proceeds support local needs, including youth groups, volunteer fire and ambulance companies, and more. Visit their website at www.pabowhunters.com for more information, and we hope to see you there this year. Their trails intersect and try to get pictures, and that's about all I did. Really didn't do anything, just general maintenance, which it's hard for a lot of people to wrap their head around. I talk about hunting on a weekly basis because I do this podcast, and you guys are in an archery shop on a weekly basis, and you think you'll eat, sleep, and breathe it. But you know, you and I were talking on the phone, Devon, the other week that least amount of preparation, just life gets too crazy. But I'm sitting here in Little Mountain Outfitters with my two friends for the first time, Mr. Terry Berge, and he's got this smirk on his face like he's like, did you really rope me into this?
Yeah, pretty much.
And the schmuck that started this all, Lebanon County's own Trigger Ganker McGee, isn't that what the sign said that
sound
time?
Sound like that, yep.
Did you ever find out who did that?
I did not.
I don't think I ever shared that story on this podcast. When we started this, Devon and I, somebody heard this or saw this and put a sign up. They made their own roadside signs that said, Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast hosting Lebanon County's own Trigger Ganker McGee, and they put them all over the Tri-County area. Mm-hmm. There's a part of that he laughs, and there's a part of that's like, man, I really want to know who did that.
You know, they say there's good good advertising, bad advertising, still advertising, right? So,
well, that's right. It was free advertising. There was, I kid you not, somebody actually saw that and went, I got to check that out. They didn't see the fine line writing of somebody harassing us.
Gotcha.
But hey, I don't care. I can take harassing. I got broad shoulders. But well, thanks for letting me come crash your party. I know you guys are busy time of year here. I was kind of curious. You've done this now, Devon, for 10 years?
This is our seventh year.
Seventh year?
Yeah.
Okay, I was thinking it was closer to
2018.
For both of you, what is one of the biggest highlights of having your own archery shop throughout a year?
Can break out with the big guns right off the bat.
Why not?
Biggest highlights, probably what's what's fun for me, or what I really enjoy, is the time we're coming into when, you know, we've been setting people up, we've been tuning bows, we've been getting guys the stuff they need, and then, you know, the next couple weeks they come back in here and, hey, look, this buck I killed or whatever. That's really rewarding. not just, you know, the products we sell, but the service we offer, help people do that, the advice we can give. Not that we really know more than they do, but, you know, it's fun to see people be successful.
Have you been here from the start, Terry?
Not necessarily. Sort of helping him here and there, but no, it's been, what, three years full time?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. And what's been your take going into this? I mean, what did you expect when you were getting out of school and you're going in to do something work related, and, you know, now you've been here for 3 years?
I don't know. I mean, I just kind of gradually got into this here, and I don't know that I ever really thought that I was going to be at an archery shop full time, but kind of just got here and I really love it.
Oh, that's what you're supposed to do when you wake up and you don't want to go to work. That's a problem.
Yeah, that's right.
We have those days too, probably.
I think everybody does. Yeah, and I think it depends on the time of year and what you got going on. I mean, I know any time in life, you're going to deal with difficult people at some point in life.
Yep.
And that could be in your day-to-day job. That could be, you know, something you're doing with kids' activities and, you know, other parents you have to get involved. Whatever that is, you're going to sometimes deal with difficult people. And that makes it not fun. But at the same time, for me, like with what I do, people are actually what make it fun too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a double-edged sword in a lot of cases.
Yep.
So I'm sure I know the answer to this question already, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What's the hardest part about having a shop?
Probably the just finding the time to go do what we love.
Which is hunt.
Yeah. Yep.
So how does that work between you two when it comes down to hunting season and deciphering that?
That's a good question. It's pretty much just very sporadic how we decide who does what. If he's getting good bucks on camera, well, and I'm not, I guess we pretty much know the answer of who's going to be in here.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we try to take turns. We don't get to hunt a whole lot together anymore like we used to, but it's part of it.
It is. Yeah. That is part of it. How, I mean, I don't even know how you begin this, but, like, how has your hunting changed over the years? You know, you started this, Devon, 7 years ago, and, you know, you were building into it at that point. How has it changed then from about 7 to 10 years ago until present day?
Well, one thing about my hunting now versus then is it's a lot more local.
Okay.
So I don't travel as much. I used to, we had a cabin about 2 hours away that I did a lot of my hunting then. That is no more. And part of the reason for that is just because I wasn't getting the time to go out there anymore. So I hunt more local. And another thing, I hunt a lot more mornings than I ever did, just because it works better here. I can hunt a morning and still come in here. Terry opens or whatever, and put a couple hours in the woods and still come in here. And evening's a little tougher, especially after time change. You know, we're open till 5 most every day, and then 8 two nights of the week. So those days are for sure out. So yeah, makes it a little tougher for early season, no doubt. But I do really enjoy hunting mornings anyways. It's just a little different. Hunting more mornings than evenings.
Did you hunt, would you have swayed that way before years ago as far as hunting mornings, or would you have said you'd hunt more evenings years
probably
ago?
I would have said I hunted more afternoon evenings.
Yep. And I think we probably, you and I have a little bit of overlap in that, because we've often sat at or around food sources,
right,
which seemed to be better in the evening in
correct
the first place. But
yep,
how was it a tougher learning has it been a tougher learning experience in trying to accomplish whatever goals you set, switching to more morning hunting, or is it not really like that?
Well, some of it is, I think my areas that I hunt have changed too, as far as, like, I feel like I probably hunt bedding areas more now than I ever did.
Okay.
So it does set up a little better for mornings. Like you said, you know, afternoon food sources, I don't do that quite as much, or I haven't the last couple of years.
Gotcha.
So yeah, probably my style has changed a little bit. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't think I've ever introduced Terry this way, but Terry is a YouTube star and has done some awesome YouTube videos over the... I'm just razzing Terry. I don't know why. I just wanted to razz Terry really bad. But no, you... I bring that up to harass you for one, but I also bring that up because you've put some videos out, and you try to hunt all over the place. I know you've hunted all over Pennsylvania and different things, and I think you killed a bear with a bow and a couple different nice bucks in different areas and stuff. Has that continued to be your goal as far as where you go and how you hunt, or how do you kind of more local because of work?
Probably a lot more local because of work now. Yeah, it's a little harder to take off for the time that you need to travel and all that stuff. I used to have some connections, like Tioga, or I still have connections to Tioga County. It's where I shot my bear.
Mm.
But yeah, finding the time, usually weekends we're kind of busy here, so it's easier to just hunt local.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't have as much time to just try to put out videos. Busy with other things in here, getting other people set up and stuff. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. We still both carry cameras, I think, most of the time. And yeah, it's really fun when it works, but I don't expect to put anything out that great anymore. I mean, not as good as that, for sure. Like, the first one that I had was the best one, and it's going to be hard to top.
That was a good video. What's the name of that one, by the way?
I don't even know.
I was trying
to
look at it on YouTube and find it. I couldn't. I'd have to go to the YouTube, because it's on the Little Mountain YouTube channel.
It's Little Mountain Productions, yeah, is where it's under. I don't even know what the video name is. Something about a public land buck, and don't know.
You hit the nail on the head with the right capital letters and the right location and all the buzzwords to get the clip. But it was a good video.
Yeah.
I think the number one comment, though, was the fact that you didn't wear a safety harness.
That was, like, the number 100 comment. No. There were so many of those.
I'm going to take a guess and say you wear a safety harness now.
Well, I saddle hunt, so it takes care of that.
True.
But in a hang-on, yeah, I definitely do, and I don't hunt out of a climber anymore, so.
Gotcha.
Yeah, pretty much takes care of that.
So when I was out hanging, I wasn't hanging tree stands, but I was putting safety ropes up. And I started using a saddle to put safety ropes up just because it's so much easier with the lineman's belt. Climb up, you can transition with your bridge rope over top of the stand, clip in, take your lineman belt off, and then I can, you know, hang my safety rope for the hang-on tree stand that I'm going to use a safety harness with. But I was thinking about it years ago. I used to be pretty doggone lazy when it came to doing that. Like, I'd want to get this up and get it done. There was times where I might twisting the tree, holding on to the tree. You have a tree that has two or three branches going up, and, you know, you're supposed to have two lineman's belts, and you put one over top, and you unclip the other one, and you keep going. There's many times I got lazy with that. And now, I think it's twofold. The true main reason is, when I had kids, it just changed my mindset of how I handle going up and down the tree anymore. The other part is I'm about 30, 40 pounds heavier and fat and out of shape than I used to be, so that has another effect to it too.
Fair enough.
I'm a little bit more careful about that kind of thing, but I think that ties well into the one thing I was going to ask you guys is, you know, you guys have, obviously, life has changed over time between work and kids and family and everything else. How does that How does that affect the way you change your mindset and your hunting goals?
Well, for me, my oldest is hunting now, has for the last 2 years.
How old is he now?
Well, she actually.
Your son is young.
Yeah, yep. She is 11. She started, let me think here, 2-3 years ago, I guess, when she was 9. 9, 10, 11. She'll be 12 this coming year. Okay. So, yeah. Obviously that takes, like, my first half of the season, I usually, you know, try to take. She enjoys it, but she's, I wouldn't say, like, has to go every opportunity she gets. She doesn't really feel that way, but she really does enjoy hunting. So, at least first part of my season, I try to, you know, get her out a decent amount, kind of try to get that out of the way. She, like I said, isn't probably quite as diehard as her younger brother will be once he starts. So far, once she shot one deer, she's fine to be done then for the season. So, yeah, we've been pretty lucky. She shot a deer every year so far with a crossbow
both
season. There's that. I mean, suddenly hunting season is just about yourself anymore. You know, there's other people that you got to help fill tags too, so.
How has that changed your mindset? Because, like, I got to be honest, like, my kids haven't started hunting yet, but the dynamic of having children, it's made me have to reevaluate what my priorities and goals are. Like, is there any one thing that stands out to you that's, I mean, obviously kids change a lot, but is there anything specific in the way you used to hunt or do things that now you had to step back and change or adjust because of that, that you don't normally think about.
Yeah. Well, one thing, like I do really enjoy the public land run and gun stuff. Mm. That is not ideal with a junior.
No.
I mean, you're not hiking a mile in with you know, and going to saddle hunt with a junior. So you have to kind of keep that in mind. I try to like figure out like, okay, where are my nice close to home spots we can go after school or whatever that are easy to get into. Maybe I have a pre-hung set there or a ladder stand. I am lucky I have one or two pieces of private land and land we own as well. So some stands there, but yeah, like my, you know, you're not going to run and gun with a youngster trailing behind you.
Well, did you figure out a backpack situation that you could bring your kid with you, Terry?
No, not yet. He's a little small for this yet.
Well, no, if you, you could probably get a backpack and strap him in, hold still, and then you could take him in the woods.
Didn't learn to be totally quiet yet, so probably won't have much success.
Are you next thing you're going to tell me he gets that from his mom?
Probably. No, probably not.
So, I mean, obviously your hunting's changed too, Terry. What goals do you set for yourself over the years?
I don't know. Just to kill a buck for once again.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I imagine it'll change quite a bit more once he gets older and stuff too. Right now, still pretty young, so not a ton has changed, but it does make you, I mean, kind of like he said, evenings are not the best for us to hunt. We're open to evenings, so, you know, I would probably not put as much time in the afternoons because trying to spend time with a family and stuff like that. Whereas, yeah, mornings you can slip out, come into work, and then you're done. So I would say that kind of changed somewhat how I hunt too, kind of the shop and family.
And I like that. And I'm kind of laying this out there because I wanted to paint a picture for people because I think a lot of people listen to podcasts. I used to do this. I don't even really listen to that many podcasts anymore because I got too much other stuff going on and talking at me. But I think a lot of people will get, you know, turn a podcast on, turn media on, and they kind of zone out and go into this ideology of it's like a world that they can't reach. Like people are going for bigger and better and unrealistic things for their personal life. And, you know, I think about this podcast and you turn this on and the people that we have on and the stories that we share, you know, you guys love archery hunting. You guys love archery equipment. You love everything about it. But when you listen to all of us talk about what goals we have and objectives and how things have changed, none of us are really trying to set the world on fire with bigger and better and trying to set any kind of standard. We're just trying to enjoy what we love. And I think that gets missed in so much of the media. Do you guys consume any hunting media anymore?
I mean,
not a ton.
Not necessarily like entertainment media. We obviously there's a lot you have to stay up on to be in this industry. So
right.
On that side of it, we
more
do.
More on the
but
gear end of things,
yeah,
probably.
Right. Mm. But aside from that, I mean, I still enjoy it, but just finding the time for it. Yeah. Not as much, no.
It's hard to make time in anymore, and there's bigger priorities.
Yep.
It's time for fall food plots, and I encourage you to look no further this year than planting Vitalize Seeds Carbon Load. Guys, this is a highly diverse plant mix of grains, grasses, brassicas, and legumes that is extremely winter hardy. It gives great tonnage and it's browse tolerant. This thrives after the nitro boost and it acts as a weed barrier in the springtime, and not to mention all the benefits it does for your native wildlife, giving ample tonnage and sequestering nutrients from deep within the soil. Check it out at vitalizeseed.com, where you can get your order today and learn more about soil health and providing great tonnage to wildlife this fall.
Listen, landowners, let Stephen Chilcote, land and timber consultant, turn your land into a deer and wildlife magnet. With over 25 years of land and timber management experience, Steve's approach optimizes food and cover to attract deer and increase hunting success for his clients. Visit us online at chilcoteforester.com or call Steve today at 814-360-4510 to make sure your land is the ultimate hunting paradise.
The gear side of things, that's one thing the shop has really, from my point of view, seen changes over the years. It's just what you guys carry. I mean, you started out as an archery shop that had a couple other odds and ends, and now you've got, I mean, you guys are basically one-stop shop in a lot of regards when it comes to archery hunting and stuff. What's that journey been like, just having a full-scale pro shop? Like, I don't know how to articulate that question, but like, you guys got a lot of different gear and options, and it's a lot of high-end gear that most people think are just going to buy it online, and you have it here. What's been that transition experience with some of the, between saddle hunting gear and camouflage and other stuff?
Yeah, well, some of it is kind of a trial and error learning curve a bit for us. obviously, we want to, you know, if somebody, say somebody wants to get into the sport, we want to have what they need from start to finish. I mean, if you just have half of it and then they, you know, are forced to go somewhere else or buy the rest online, that's not ideal either. Especially thinking of a beginner being able to, you know, set them up from start to finish and tell them how their equipment works and how to use it. That's pretty valuable. So I think, yeah, at some point we will reach a space issue as well, but which we're probably pretty close to. But yeah, aside from that, it's just, you know, kind of trying to think what else could we bring in that people would see valuable as, you know, being, you know, I can get all my stuff at one spot.
I mean, go ahead, Terry.
And also being able to come in and touch and feel it and, yep, and see how it works. That's a big thing.
Well, the biggest problem I have with a lot of the new hunting gear, because we've gone to a system of everything's online, like, online is great when you know what you want, because, yep, a lot of people will just go online and they're going to shop for the best deal that they can possibly find. They're going to buy it and ship it to their door, and they don't got to do anything other than click a couple buttons. But when you don't know what you want, that's where a shop comes in handy. And I really, like, I used to be big on just buy it online, buy it cheaper, and I've kind of realized, like, there's so much value in, there's still so much value in stores and people that have the knowledge behind it. Because I'll take saddle hunting for an example. I mean, you guys are, I learned a lot about saddle hunting from you two because I was pretty novice at it. I mean, I had one friend that saddle hunted, gave me an old saddle, one of those old, the trophy line, yep, neoprene ones. It was like you're wearing a diaper in early season. It just held that heat in so bad. But that was my start. And then just talking to you guys about, like, understanding what's changing in gear and stuff, and then being able to come to the shop and hold it and see it and try it and then ask you guys questions, and then you guys get feedback from other people. That was a huge difference for me, and I'm sure that's probably been a feedback you've gotten, you know, beyond me.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. That's probably one of the things where one of the, maybe you'd say, niche markets we're in that you know, people can't just go anywhere and find is the amount of saddle gear that we have here. And just, yeah, being able to see it in person, how it works and how to use it and what it looks like, what it feels like. I think that's pretty valuable. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of that only gets sold online. So if you want to buy it, you're kind of out of luck if you want to see it in person.
Right.
So we try to, you know, bring as much in here as we can that people might need.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have, I know you got some Latitude stuff, some Tethered, some Trophy Line. I mean, there's a pretty good amount of, and I'm so out of that world of what all is available, but, like, you guys have a really, really good base to try it. You know, I know I've had this conversation with other people that work pro shops. I think I've even had this conversation with you that, you know, there's some gear that people are just drawn to, and they'll come, and that's just what they're going to buy. They don't have to try anything else. But to me, there's so much value. Same thing with shooting a bow. Like, if I ever get to the point where Terry razzes me too much and my bow is too beat up, then I'm going to buy a new bow, and I'm going to say, set up every single bow that you have here at this axle length and draw length, and I'm going to shoot them, and I'm going to pick one and see which one I like. And that's where there's value in this. And anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
So when you think back to, you were talking earlier, you used to have a farm, Devon, out 2 hours away. Now you got some more local things. Talk a little bit about hunting season this year. We talked about you're going to try to get away in mornings and stuff like that. Right before we got started, you said you have a mission to kill some does too. What specifically are you going after this year? Is it a lot of doe management on this new place and trying to learn a new place?
Yeah, probably some of that. And some of that might change last minute, too. Probably the, one of the reasons that it seems like that's the going to be my goal right now. I don't really have anything on camera that I'm too excited about yet. That may change.
Yeah.
Probably, hopefully. But yeah, I think at this point, we're still a little over a month out yet.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, my goal for the first 2-3 weeks is, yeah, shoot some doe local. And yeah, if something good shows up at one of my other spots, maybe I'll, as far as buck wise, maybe I'll try to go after it. But I think shooting some does is going to be kind of what I'm going to focus on first thing. Yeah, at my probably at my house, and also the new place there right up the road.
Sure.
Kind of have a goal of, I've never actually shot a deer at my place.
The kids did, right?
Mm-mm.
No?
We never have.
Okay.
So I'd like to shoot one or two doe there. Seems to be an overabundance of them there this year, so.
Oh, really?
There's late beans in all the neighbors' fields. So
that's going to keep deer around for sure.
Yep. So, yeah, that kind of plays right into my what I was talking about before. It sets up pretty nice for mornings because we're in off the field. So
you're in off the field. You kind of slip in from the side.
Yeah. Catch the deer coming in off, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. We have, you know, you were talking about cameras, and I was showing you my cell camera pictures, and I know you guys all run cell cameras, and they're a valuable tool. I struggle sometimes with, I'll give you an example. The place I was out that I showed you that buck at in western Pennsylvania, I put those camera locations in those places because I have history with that property. Not a lot has changed. The food sources don't really change year to year. Not a lot about the surrounding area changes. The deer do a pretty consistent thing as far as where they're bedding, what trails they like to use. And I've kind of read it that there's a couple pinch points or specific points in bedding close to stands that they make sense for access getting in and out. And I stick a cell camera there, and in the off season, I will walk the property a little bit just to kind of get a lay of, has something changed in my mind or have I missed something? But I do get to a point where, you know, I put a cell camera in two of those locations that are relevant from my mind as far as hunting, and I didn't really do much other preparation to that. And I have this wrestling, dilemma with me. On one hand, I'm like, I don't have that much time. It's 4 hours away, and there's really not a lot I'm going to be able to do to prepare, but that's a useful tool to help me decide if I'm going to take a 4-hour drive and go hunt for a weekend or something. On the other hand, it really bugs me that sometimes I feel like I'm leaning too hard on the technology.
Yep.
Now, I know time sometimes makes me, I use that as my crutch to say, well, I don't have time, so that's my crutch to use it. But I wrestle with that a little bit and how much to do that. You guys have any thoughts when it comes to using cell cameras throughout the year?
So I've ran a lot, and I really enjoy running cameras. It's really fun to get pictures of good bucks.
Yep.
A lot of times, if you know, you catch things that maybe you'd never end up getting to see during the season. And it's a lot of fun to just pick a spot, I think this is a good spot, and then you get cameras or get pictures of good bucks. But I think some of the seasons, maybe I ended up trying to just hunt with cameras instead of actually doing the hunting, you know.
Yeah.
You're trying to pinpoint where a buck is when you should just be hunting. So I think that's changed maybe a little bit. I don't have near as many out this year, and I don't know, we'll see. I want to have maybe the mindset of just if the weather's right and if the time is right that you have to hunt, you know, just go hunt it. And I think maybe I leaned on that a little bit much, and then you end up chasing your tail.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
A lot more with cell cameras. I think they're very valuable to know what's there. And yeah, you got property, you know, a ways away. You're not going to have the time to drive up
right
back and forth checking cameras.
Yeah, I found it like when I used to run all regular SD cameras, I used to just run them in places that I'd just let them soak. You know, maybe if you hunt a spot and there's a camera right there, you can get in and pull the card, and I might have 1,000 pictures or whatever to go through. But I used to use those cameras to just see how they reacted throughout a spot. You do that 2 or 3 years, and you can kind of get trends of maybe like the one spot close to my house. I've learned somewhere between October 15th, 16th, and the 23rd, 24th, at some point a doe is going to get hot in that area, because every single year I start getting bucks that have never shown their face throughout the summer will cruise through that area checking it out, and I'll see them chasing a doe. And when I switched to using some cell cameras in some of those places, I learned that, I experienced what you were talking about, Terry, like chasing my tail a little bit, like, oh, there's a buck here. Maybe I'll think about seeing what the weather's like this weekend. If the wind's right, I'm going to go hunt it. And you end up missing the mark because you get your, I got the picture and then it was too late. So I kind of had to find like a hybrid where, yeah, I use cell cameras and it gives you a sense of gratification, or it solidifies what you believe. But I still have to take that mindset of and document somehow, way, shape, or form, when are they using an area? Like that buck I killed at my place that other year, yep. that deer taught me some stuff there. And then I started to follow that pattern of there's a window here that deer start to work. And I think it was 2 years ago. I was not getting pictures. In fact, the camera I had wasn't even working right. But I was looking at the dates, and I was looking. I think it was around the 16th or the 17th of October. We had a big cold front come through, and it was a nice high pressure morning forecasted, and the wind was right. And I hadn't been in the stand yet. And I had no idea what was there. I just decided, you know what, this is lining up. I'm going to try it. And I climbed up in the stand, and I didn't get a shot at it, but I had a really nice buck that was probably, pushing 130-inch deer come at me just outside of bow range. And then I fixed my camera, and a day or two later, I had pictures of him. Now, I don't know, was he there beforehand? I can't tell, but it just felt like in that situation, I was doing a hybrid of the two. But I struggle with that, and as we were talking earlier about time and time management, I figured you guys experienced something similar too.
Yeah. One thing in relation to that, there's a spot I can think of offhand. There's about a mile back in on some public, a pretty good scrape that for the last couple of years I've had a camera over. And there's always seems to be a fairly decent buck that hits it mid-October, maybe 2-3 times. And for the last couple of years, not last year, I kind of had another buck I was going after. But it's always like, all right, so hit the scrape in daylight once. I'll wait, see if he hits it again. Okay, I'm going to go hunt it now. Well, he may not show that third time. It's just kind of a buck, doesn't really live there, passes through, hits a scrape a couple times. Like, you got to be there before that first time. So, like, that window of October 13 to 18, which historically the last couple of years that scrape has gotten hit by a mature buck in daylight, sometime in there, if you could, get a cold front to coincide with those dates, I think it's going to be just slide in there regardless of what the camera's been showing. Stuff like that, I think that's where you can let a cell camera kind of persuade you to just wait, and then it's too late. Yep.
How does weather influence you guys? a lot of people, I think, will talk about, and we just brought up cold front, and you want to be hunting that. I like cold fronts. I mostly look at what the wind direction is doing if I can hunt that spot. So I'm sure that's another layer of complexity when it's October 15th and the two of you haven't got out too much and you both are looking ahead and, wow, there's a cold front coming in 2 days. How are we managing this?
It's like the sign says out on the front of our door.
Yeah, we may be here, we might not be. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I missed that.
It's just a joke, but...
Oh.
But yeah. Sometimes it's real.
It can be.
So in that case, I'm not sure what part of your question you want answered first, but if there is a morning where we both want to hunt, a lot of times, like I said, one of us will just hunt more local and just climb out early, be here to open or soon after opening at any rate. Mid-October, I guess I'm not super concerned about sitting till lunchtime or anything necessarily, so that's not a real big deal there, but... as far as how weather plays into it, there again, I don't know. I feel like, we hunt when we can.
Yeah. Yes,
it's in a perfect world, you pick the best days and hunt those, but the busier we all get, I think the more we hunt when we can, try to make the best of it. And yeah, you don't want to hunt a bad wind, obviously, but if the wind's bad for where you're planning to go and that's the day you have to hunt, the afternoon or morning you have to hunt, you just pick somewhere else that's going to work for. Kind of roll with it that way a little more than picking a spot and waiting for the perfect time.
And probably would try to hit, I have a couple just local small spots that are kind of permission spots to try to fill some doe tags. And so, you know, when the wind's right but the weather's not ideal, those are usually the spots, you know, we pick to go instead of, you know, going way back in on public, wasting your time. When the weather's not ideal.
Right. Yeah, we're not hiking 2 miles back in on a 75 degree, you know, October 15 day necessarily, unless there's something super exciting.
Something that
there,
tells you should be.
Yep.
Yeah. So shifting gears a little bit, I was on a podcast here recently on somebody else's show. For somehow we got talking about equipment. And, you know, there was a time where I loved to add equipment, change equipment, try this, try that. And I kind of got wrapped up in that. And over time, I've kind of subsided from that. And I've kind of found something that I get really, really comfortable with. And I get a little bit anxious to make too many big changes, especially when we get close to the season. But I found certain gear that works, and I don't like to change too much of that. Now, for you guys, you're in the world of new gear all the time. New bows, new broadheads, new arrows, new this, new that. And you were talking about that earlier, touched on it, that you want to have knowledge about it. You want to be able to share information. So I know you tinker. Talk to me about a little bit about what you guys are shooting this year and why.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm probably more of the gear nut.
Yeah,
that
Terry's
I like the new things. Yep. I kind of like to see how everything works, and I like to know about it, so that I can help other people try to decide what works best for their hunting, you know, what they want to do.
Right.
But yeah, I also just enjoy just seeing the new things that come out and messing around with it. For this year, the bow I'm shooting is the new Prime Form. So that hybrid carbon aluminum bow. So far, really like it. It was the first year I'm hunting with a Prime, so we'll see how that goes. But
you hunted with a Prime a few years ago, didn't
you? I did, yeah. Yeah. We really like Prime.
They're good bows. I thought I'd have to get used to that new riser. I thought it felt a little strange when I shot it, but I only shot like one or two shots out of it. You guys are forming opinions with it. This is just my personal opinion, and I'm sure you don't want to stick your neck out too far because you sell the bows, but me personally, like, I've been in the shop and shot almost every company bow here, and I think I like things about every single one of them. Like, I feel like years ago, there was big differences between bow companies. I'd pick a bow up, and to me, it just seemed like there was attributes of the bow that was not as good as others. Now it seems like that gap is so narrowed. So, I mean, why do you shoot what you shoot at this point? I mean, just it's the same way you always did out of feel. But, like, I know you guys have bounced around to different bows just because you can over the years. I mean, what's your take on it?
Yeah. Well, probably one of the hardest things is to tell somebody comes in here to buy a new bow. It's like, well, which one is the best? Well, I mean, they're all good or they wouldn't be in business. It basically comes down to the feel that you like or... Yeah, there's different things, accessories that are available for that one. Maybe draw length. If your draw is super long, that's going to cut a couple of them out, or super short. You know, Matthews makes a short draw bow and a long draw bow. So that's, you know, if somebody's short or long, that could be something that may, you know, influence your decision. Just different stuff like that. As far as, like, why I pick to shoot what I shoot, yeah, like you said, I kind of enjoy bouncing from one company to the next. I think it gives you kind of a good to shoot a bow in here. Even if we shoot, you know, so right now the Lift X's came out in November, so we've been setting people up and shooting them for, you know, however long, 9 months or whatever, 8 months. But like, to actually get a good honest feel for a bow and give good feedback, you got to hunt with it for a season, basically. So that's kind of our goal. We try to, we both pick a company and roll with it for a season, and next year decide if we're going to change it up or not. Just, I don't know, helps us to give a little more. Because, yeah, honest feedback. A lot of people ask, so what do you guys shoot? Mm. So if we always shoot the same thing, I mean, yeah, there's companies that maybe we like better than others, but at the same time, like, we're here to, you know, to set somebody up with whatever they want. So, yeah, try not to be too sway people too much one way or another. I think it's important that if somebody comes in here and they kind of know what they want, just do our best to set them up with that.
I don't want to go down the rabbit hole too much, but I know the last time we had you on the podcast, we talked a little bit about arrows, and because I feel like we're on the backside of the world of, you know, heavy arrows and everything else. People are starting to form their opinions, and there's so much gear out there. Where do you guys land? Do you tinker with new arrow setups every year? Do you have, like, I've gotten to the point now where you build an arrow setup for me, or you build it, I can't remember which one of you, but build a setup for me, and I got it tuned and shot well with my bow, and I like it, so I stick with it, and I don't really want to, I get uncomfortable thinking about changing that. You know, do you guys treat arrow setups a lot like you treat bows over the years and kind of tinker to learn, or is that one of those things where you kind of land on stuff over the years and I don't want to change too much?
Yeah, I mean, we both shot pretty heavy for a while, had good results with it and everything. But I think the trend now maybe is a little bit, people like to shoot their bows far. You know, they're capable of shooting far, maybe not at deer, but practicing. And when you have heavy arrows, I personally like to shoot farther. Yeah. And so if you have a heavy arrow, you lose distance quite a bit, and it's not as enjoyable to shoot. And so I probably aired quite a bit lighter now, just kind of for that reason. And then I don't want to, you know, switch right before hunting season and shoot a heavy arrow.
Yeah.
You know, so it makes more sense probably just to shoot kind of that middle of the road, 450, 500 grains, you know, somewhere in there. It's really good for about anything. So probably that's more where I would lean. Yeah. One thing a lot of people don't figure into is, like, when they switch an arrow setups, it changes a lot with your bow.
Big time.
Yeah, so, like, tuning's very important if you switch arrow setups to retune your bow and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what you said there is definitely we're seeing a trend kind of back in the other direction, too. Yeah, a couple years ago it was heavy, heavy, heavy. That was the thing. That's where what everybody was pushing. And I think we've kind of seen it start to go the other way, or at least, like, maybe become a little more reasonable. Some of that is, I think, you know, the last couple of years, as popular as, like, the TAC events and like these big 3D shoots are becoming, you know, there's a lot of long distance shots there, and so that plays into it some. You're not going to go to a shoot like that shooting 700 grain arrows, or you're going to be flat out of luck when you have to shoot a giraffe at 130 yards or whatever it is.
You guys ever go to a TAC event?
I was there once a couple years ago at Seven Springs.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I had to stay in the shop.
Yeah. And so then I haven't gone since.
But I bet if you had to take a pick between missing a TAC event and missing a morning in October, I think I know which one you'd pick, Devon.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it would be fun to go. I would love to do that. But yeah, hunting is would probably be my priority.
Yep. Yeah. I went to an R100 shoot here recently, and that was a lot of fun. That was a nice course, nice targets, and it had a good mix of distance between, you know, I think the closest shot was 16 yards, and the furthest one was 90, I think it was flat 90 yards, and that was a lot of fun. And, you know, I used to, like you talked about shooting long distance, I love to shoot long distance. It was rough for me because I literally, the last time I picked my bow up to shoot before I went to this R100 was when I shot your winter league. So it was a little rough. Now, I grooved in and I shot pretty decent, give all things considered, but I just don't have the time to shoot long distance. And I used to want to shoot, you know, have my sight tape maxed out as far as I could, shooting long distance, you know. I don't know if it was Levi Morgan who was influencing me or what, but I loved it. And I still love to do that, but I finally realized, like, this is where I'm at with bow hunting, and I want to be the best bow hunter I can be, and what setup do I want to shoot that I feel the most confident and successful with? And I went through the whole phase of trying different arrows, and you guys watched me build a, you know, you build it for me, a real stupid heavy setup on the one bow I had, And I learned quickly what I didn't like about it and what I did like about the system, and it kind of landed me in the middle. I think my setup is like a 500 grain arrow, and hey, it's worked. I've killed a lot of stuff with it, and my broadhead accuracy with the way you guys tuned it for me has been phenomenal, and I can't say enough positive things. I mean, I remember shooting broadheads years ago. I would, you know, I used to always switch and shoot broadheads only from about mid-August, beginning of September through season. I would never shoot a field point. And in some cases, I still do, but I realized I had to micromanage arrows, the arrows I numbered and the broadheads I put on because of that very reason. There was so much inconsistency. I think it was the way I had my bow tuned. And like, you guys taught me some stuff. I learned a couple things on my own. We kind of meshed it together. And now it's been crazy how I can put a broadhead on and it's shooting bullet holes with my field points. And I like, my confidence level is there to the point where I save myself a little bit extra money when I'm not buying a broadhead target annually because I shoot the daylights out of it. I still shoot broadheads throughout the year, constantly have a couple in my quiver. But I think the tuning aspect and choosing that arrow was a big deal for me. I don't know if other people kind of view that point where they just finally gravitate towards something that works for them, or if everybody's still chasing the next best and better, but I'm sure you see an array of things throughout the shop.
Yeah, for sure. I think to your point there on tuning, that's something that a lot of people underestimate. Yeah, it's astounding the amount of people that never shoot a broadhead before the season. And then, you know, we had a guy in fairly recently that had gone on an elk hunt and had never shot his broad. This was last year, I believe. Had never shot his broadheads beforehand. And, yeah, what did he say? He shot an elk and was like 6 feet to the right or something in here. That was just how his broadheads were flying. His bow was that out of tune. So, yeah, it's things that you just have to be aware of. And it's not something that just because you got your bow tuned 2 years ago, it doesn't mean that it's still shooting everything the same for sure. Pretty much, if you want to be really consistent and precise, you know, every season, that's something you look at and make sure it's good to go. Especially with, you know, if you're not doing strings on a regular basis, you have, well, even if you are, but string stretch, that sort of thing, it all plays into it.
There's a lot that plays into it. And yep. I think there's a lot of things that people don't realize. And here's another thing I've learned, and I've compared it to myself when I was a kid. Like, when I was a kid, I played football. And the only reason I played football was peer pressure. A lot of people, you got the strength, you got the agility, the athleticism, you should be playing football. Okay, so I played football, and I did it. It wasn't a bad experience, but I played football. I wasn't much of a football player just because my mind and my heart wasn't into it. I'd think about it when it was close to that time, and I'd go through the motions. And, you know, there was many times where we'd be watching film or doing something, and I'm, like, looking out the window thinking, man, there's probably a deer under my stand I could be chasing. Like, that was just me all the time. And the reality is, I think there's a lot of hunters out there that have the approach that I had with football. I mean, I enjoyed it. I like it. I do it. I did it every year until I couldn't anymore. But it's not that thing that I think about. And there's the little nuances you probably miss. And broadhead, I mean, we could probably talk about broadheads for a long time because I think that gets missed a lot. And I don't know where we miss it in the world of archery. Like, there's just a lot of people that learn the hard way, like, shoot your broadheads.
Yep. Yep. But
anyway. Well, gentlemen, I know we're here in the workday. I know you're probably getting very close to you opening up, and I know you've been very, very busy. And I'm sure you're busy for people last minute purchases and adjustments on bows. And are you still getting people that are buying new bows at this point in the season?
Yes, we are. Yep.
Good for you.
Historically, September will probably be our biggest bow selling month. Actually, believe it or not.
Really?
Yep. Yeah.
Good. I'm just thinking to myself, like, if I bought a bow in September and season was October or the end of September, I would have so much anxiety in that setup.
Yeah. That's, I don't know if, you know, people just don't think about it or, I mean, there's a lot of things that, yeah, you know, sometimes you've, you know, something happens to your bow or whatever, you're forced to buy a new one over waiting a couple weeks on parts or whatever it is, that I can understand. But if you knew you were going on your dream hunt first week in November, I personally probably wouldn't be buying a new bow in the middle of October. But, yeah, we're here for it.
Yeah, we're here for it. Come on, come on, spend your money. But we're saying this jokingly. But I mean, at the same time, there's a lot of people that come in and do that, and there's nothing wrong with that because I think everybody's mindset and what gives them confidence is different.
That's right.
And there's some people that if they're actually, you know, majorly upgrading, it might just shoot better than what they had been shooting all season.
Oh, really?
You know? Yep. Yeah. You know, they might be upgrading from a youth bow that they were still in that wasn't set up for them anymore. And, you know, jumping into one that we set them up right, we tune it, you know, with the setup, they may end up actually having a way better experience even though it's right before the season.
Yep.
And that makes sense, too. And I wouldn't think about something like that, but equipment probably, like, you know, Terry's going to be on me in a couple of years when, you know, my bow's getting to be 15
Not a
years
couple
old.
Years.
After we turn this off.
Well, I can tell you right now, I ain't buying one this year. Maybe we'll talk in winter. But no, like I, that makes perfect sense. When the technology has come leaps and bounds over time, there probably are people that wait 10, 15, 20 years to buy a new bow. Mm-hmm. Or either that or they start with something cheap and want to upgrade in short term.
Yeah. In no way we're downplaying those people at all. I mean, I realize everybody has different things going on, and sometimes you only get around to it right before the season, and that's fine.
Well, when
you have to consider that.
And when you start archery hunting, or you start anything, I mean, this is me. I don't spend the most expensive money on stuff in the first place. I usually start consumer-wise and try it out, and if I like it, I'm going to upgrade. That's what I did with archery when I was a kid. I mean, I spent the money on what I could afford, and I stuck with it as long as I could until I had money burning a hole in my pocket to buy the next one and continue to go down that rabbit hole. And, yeah, but now, guys, I appreciate you kind of talking about shop, talking about archery hunting life, and I'm hoping you guys have a really, really good season. I know you're looking forward to different things, and I appreciate you kind of sharing life around here. Is there anything shop-related you want to share before I kind of let you guys go, or hunting-related or anything?
Yeah, I don't think so, really. If you need any last-minute tuning stuff, whatever it is, with your bow, saddle setup, come in to pick our brain about something, we're here for that as well.
Now, so you have a lot of what you have in the shop also on the website that people can see it. So, like, if you were curious if Devon and Terry have something in the shop and you don't know about it, if you go on the website, you might see that it's there.
Absolutely.
And then you could say, well, I want to go test that out.
Yep. Pretty much everything is available to purchase on our website except for, you know, some of the stuff we can't sell online, bows. But
you can't buy a bow online?
I mean, you can. Not your most of your flagship bows, you can't.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay. So you have to wait until somebody uses it for a year, then sells it on eBay or Facebook Marketplace.
Yep.
which I'm sure. And we didn't talk about that, and that's probably something that we should have touched on a little bit. But it has to be a challenge in the world of online sales with what you guys do. And I can't stress it enough. Like, I used to do that a lot. But there's so much value for Devon and Terry and what they do in this shop. And I think there's a lot of other shops throughout the country that are in the same boat as you.
Yep.
And a lot of aspects. And, like, I try not to take advantage of or try to miss the mark on the fact that, like, there's so much value in the knowledge and experience you guys have on a day-to-day with this. And, you know, don't let that go by the wayside just because you can buy it online for $25 cheaper. There's a lot of value in what you guys do here. And I'm sure you guys could go down a rabbit hole in that conversation, but it's business too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You're always going to have that and, try to roll with it. But if somebody's local, it definitely makes sense in my mind to come and see it and buy it in person. If someone's not local and you have questions about it, call us, ask us. Yeah, we can ship, like I said, some of the stuff we have here, and we're doing quite a bit of that as well. But, online or in person is always better, in my opinion.
I agree. Well, I'm going to let you guys go. Terry looks like he's going to have the jitters here soon. He's the pressure on the podcast. But No, I don't know why. I just wanted to harass Terry this morning. Well, thank you guys for coming on the show and doing this. I appreciate it, and I hope people come check you out, and I really hope you guys have a great hunting season, so thank you.
Yep, same to you. Well, thanks a lot.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.